A mother is anyone who channels feminine energy to nurture people and love them unconditionally. For many LGBTQ plus folks, we've had to seek out that energy when we didn't get enough from our own mothers. Sometimes we found it in an auntie, a friend, or a mentor, but oftentimes it was the divas in showbiz that raised us.
From the singing divas like Eartha Kitt to Shirley Bassey, to open lesbian stand-up comedians like Sandra Bernhardt and Moms Mabley, to the hilarious redheads of television like Carol Burnett and Lucille Ball, these women cranked up the mother goddess factor like no other and brought up generations of queer youth.
Today, Alexandra Gray joins us to reflect on all the great mamas who loved us. From Diana Ross, who taught us to stop in the name of love, to Madonna, who told us to justify our love.
Plus, some of the great women from Feast of Fun, who gave us invaluable life lessons.
I am Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
This is your mommy's podcast.
Why, hello, Sugar Britches. How are you?
Well, you don't know if this is a collection agency or Fausto Fernos.
Well, darling, Fausto Fernos popped up in my images saying FaceTime audio.
Oh.
So that's hence the reason why I could answer that way.
Foiled again.
Otherwise, I would have went, I'm sorry, she ain't here, and it's after the time. Don't be calling this late.
She don't live here no more.
She Alexander, ain't here.
It's a pleasure to hear your voice.
Hello, my darling. How are you?
I'm okay.
That's Mark Fillion.
Yes.
The soulful, soothing daddy to everybody. Everybody calls Mark daddy.
Even you.
Even me. Mm-hmm. I started calling you daddy because everybody else was calling you dad.
That one word would get you in a whole lot of trouble.
Also a lot of fun, too.
Hey, Dad.
Well, we were planning on taping a show for Mother's Day about the amazing women in entertainment that have nurtured us and cultivated our spirit.
Yes.
And sadly, Mark's mother just passed away.
My mother died in the first day of May, and so we're just like, We have to postpone everything.
Yeah.
No, and you lost your mother this year, too. So
I did. I lost my mother. I lost my mother February 7th, and I lost my father February 11th.
I can't. That's just that's too much.
So you guys are like Batman and Superman. It's like, your mother's name was Martha, too?
Right.
Oh, I don't hate you anymore. I love you.
Right.
But you guys have sharing a lot in common in the sense that, like, you know, losing your mom is never easy for anybody to go through. And it's never an easy thing to say goodbye to somebody who loved us.
Exactly. I lost my dad 20 years ago, and it was a hard death for me to take because I feel like he was taken too young from us. He was at the time he was 81. But, you know, my mom was 96 years old. She lived a full life. And we're going to Fausto and I are going to do another podcast, and I'm going to talk about my relationship more about my mom, too.
I love that.
You know, I'll read some of her obituary. And I actually delivered the eulogy at her funeral. My brothers and sisters asked me to do it since I'd done my dad's, you know, same church, same pulpit, same place. But now you lost both your parents within days of each other.
Yes, I did. My parents were together 52 years.
Mm.
They met in high school. They met in junior high, actually. Mm. They met in the seventh grade.
Mm.
And they were together from the seventh grade till they left.
I'm so sorry. Now, Mother's Day just happened, and, you know, we buried my mother the day before Mother's Day, and I wanted to do a Facebook update because everybody on Mother's Day would be like, this is the first Mother's Day without mother, and I wanted to do something snarky and be like, of course, we just buried her yesterday, but and Faust was like, you can't do that, and I told my best friend that, too, and she just laughed, but she's you can't post that on Facebook.
My mother and I had a tenuous relationship, and so it was... So, like, when you all brought this idea of moms, I am blessed because I've often said that I was raised in a village, both in my own family and in my family of choice, raised in a village. And so, like, for me, so when I was born, my mom was 19. So I had my grandmother. I had my great grandmother. My mother had five sisters. My father has five sisters. Now of the 10 aunts, there are only six, three on my mom's side. No, two on my mother's side and three on my dad's side, so five are gone. So I grew up with this amazing village of women who took care of me and even created my world. You know, who I am now is based a lot in my aunts and my great aunts and my grandmother. And, you know, of course, the musical ladies that we talk about, you know, or mm-hmm. we're going to talk about. So it's an interesting, you know, it's a very interesting thing, you know, so.
In terms of your gender identity, like, you know, was that something that was an easy discussion to have or a difficult one with your family?
Oh, well, with the family.
I'm being a little facetious, of course. Yeah.
With the family, like when I came out as gay, so two of my dad's sisters. So I told my Aunt Phyllis, who is no longer with me, who is very much like my mom as well. When I told her, I was like, "Aunt Phyllis, I'm gay." She says, "I know, get in the car, we're late."
How old were you?
I was 19. I was in college. I was a freshman in college.
Where were you guys going?
We were doing something.
To
we
the
were
gay doing bar.
Something. No, no.
Cruising.
Get in the car, loser. We're going shopping.
She lived in small town Northeast Iowa. Mm-hmm. I went to college in Northeast Iowa. And so we were going to something. I don't remember what we were going to. And I told her. And she's like, "I know. Get in the car. We're late." And then I told my other aunt. And she said, "Now, baby." You know, Southern lady that she was. "Now, baby." My nickname is Fuzzy. My childhood nickname is Fuzzy. And she said, "Now, Fuzzy, was it?" "Yes." "Now, baby, Stevie Wonder could see that. You ain't got to tell nobody that. We know." And Dad's response was funny. Dad's response was, "Well, duh, stupid." That was Dad's response to it all. Coming out as trans was a little bit different, but those same people, Dad had the best response. "Well, thank God you figured it out, because you made me a little nervous. I wasn't sure."
Oh.
So my, you
How's
know.
That feel though? Does it feel kind of like they're stealing your thunder a little bit? You wanted them to be like, "Oh my."
You know what? Coming out of the Black community, I expected possible negative reactions and possible sort of violence and didn't get it.
Mm.
And so that actually made me happier that sort of thing didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's often portrayed in the media, you know, these coming out stories for Black people and the family can be very unaccepting. But, you know, there's a lot of Black families are out there that are just like,
yeah,
you just be you.
But, yeah, you know, I always tell this to, like, people whose parents said, "Oh, we knew all along." I was like, "Well, if you knew all along, why didn't you just say, like, you know, LGBTQ people are beautiful just the way they are."
Yeah.
"And I don't know if you are or not, but either way, I love you unconditionally." Like, if parents could just say that to everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
it would make life easier. But, you know, people got to be difficult and trifling and shiftless. So that's what it is.
You can be anybody that you want to be. You can love whomever you wish.
What is that from?
It's
the gay chorus.
It's a gay chorus thing. The Flirtations.
The Flirtations.
No. No.
You can go anywhere where your heart leads, and know I will love you still.
Oh.
You know, if parents could just say those two sentences to their children, the world would be so much more at peace. Oh. And, you know, in the absence of getting the love that we need from the unconditional love we need from our families. And so, listen, you know, all our mothers are just human beings.
Mm. Right. And I think that we as people need to understand that sometimes our families love us within the scope that they simply are capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what we want from that person is simply not capable of giving that. And we have to be okay with it.
Mm.
Like, that was one of the things that I had to accept and be okay with. Like, what I'm looking for you fall short.
Yeah.
But there is someone out there, you know, for all of the times that people told me no, there were other people who told me yes. So I went out and started looking for the yes, for the yeses. And so to get into the topic of what we're talking about, that's where my love of divas came from.
Well, and, you know, like divas is kind of a mean name because it means like a pushy woman who puts up.
No. In opera, in the historical term.
No, yeah.
The term diva means goddess.
Yes, but also it's a woman who will not be spurned, you know, who takes no shit.
And when you look at some of those women who earned that title, they earned it rightfully. I mean, I adore Maria Callas for
that's
that.
That's who I was thinking about, too. Yeah,
and a great deal of people, when they think diva, they think Maria Callas. And I think they think of Callas's antics. She was notoriously high strung. She was notorious for being high strung. She was notorious for being dramatic. But those things went with the woman with some of her experiences. So, you know.
It was, you know, a diva was just a female, opera singer. She was the diva, you know what I mean? But then
she was just
when you are good, you get to demand things. And when you're a woman and you start to demand things, you become difficult.
You become perceived difficult by people who think that women should not receive the things that they are due.
Right.
I mean, I've been called a diva once or twice in my lifetime.
Do you sing opera?
I do actually sing opera.
Well, maybe that's why they called you a diva.
No, they probably called me a diva because I can be temperamental as hell and don't take shit from people.
Well, right. For me, you know, and for you and so many people that we share in common, a sisterhood, I've noticed that we all have one entertainer that we all come back to time and time again that brings us all together. And you know who I'm talking about.
Well, okay. I don't know. I don't know who you're talking about.
You do not know who I'm talking about.
No, I know that you and I both share a great love of Miss Eartha Kitt.
I love Eartha Kitt too.
But the funny thing is, Alexandra, Matt Brown.
Yeah.
Like, who are the other people? So many people that we've had on the show and we run across through the years, ages, generations, demographics, people that I said, there's no way you would know who Eartha Kitt even is. They're like, I love Eartha Kitt. Eartha Kitt speaks to me. Mm-hmm. Eartha Kitt is like my surrogate mother.
Well, gentlemen and ladies of a certain age would all know who Eartha Kitt is and appreciate her. You know, she was a camp icon, you know, especially since the time of Batman and then the 70s and 80s.
But if she was even like, you know, she was, her last television appearance was as Krusty the Clown's third wife mm-hmm. on The Simpsons. And she said, our honeymoon lasted just 5 minutes. It was a catastrophe.
And she got paid. Ka-ching.
Ka-ching, ka-ching. And you go get the check. No, I mean, for me, growing up and being a black kid who wanted to be in entertainment, you know, I had family members who were like, these are people you need to know because they are, you know, they are the greats at what they do. And, you know, Eartha was just one of those people that I was supposed to know who she was. And when, you know, and I always say, for me, it was when most of my friends were running, when the gay boys I know were running around and they wanted to be Batman and Superman. Oh, I want to be Catwoman. I knew exactly who I wanted to be. And she helped mold. There are nuances of Miss Kitt mm-hmm. in the character, especially in the early years. Like when I first started doing drag, Alexandra St. James was this sort of blend of Eartha Kitt, Dorothy Dandridge, and Lena Horne. And Diane Carroll. That's who I thought I was.
Yeah.
And so there were these wonderful elements from each of these women as a singer, how I dressed, etc., that I wanted to bring to the stage. And as I evolved as a person, those things slid off. And so the things that were truer to me were the things that stayed. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, I can very easily get up on a stage and recreate those women anytime that I want. But they were these iconic people for me.
Yeah, part of it is like, you know, Eartha Kitt is somebody who was rejected by her Black family and by the white people that she grew up around in South Carolina.
North, South.
North, in the town of North in South Carolina. Or is it South in North Carolina?
The town of North.
North in South Carolina, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for Eartha, she, like a lot of LGBTQ plus people, she always felt at odds with the world around her. Like she never felt like she fully fit in.
And she became who she needed to be. And she created this powerful, amazing person. And so that's the best part. We make ourselves sometimes. I certainly didn't for myself, you know. And so but I also look at the other women who I idolize as performers. You know, Patti LaBelle, as far as I'm concerned, can do no wrong. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Gladys Knight. But for me, I grew up listening to all kinds of music. So I grew up surrounded by music, and I was able to listen to music in every genre. And there were just these people where vocally, I wanted to sound like Inez Andrews from the Caravans. I wanted to sound like Albertina Walker. I wanted to be able to sing like Coco Taylor. I wanted to be able to sing like Lena Horne. You know, so music for me, music was the thing that growing up as a little Black boy on the South Side of Chicago, music was going to be the thing that got me out.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Eartha Kitt, though, she stands far and above pretty much every entertainer that I've had the pleasure of meeting and working with. But also, like, you know, like part of it is like Eartha, because she had such a tormented relationship with her own mother, that, you know, being a mother to her daughter, Kit Shapiro, was very important. Mm-hmm. And so when we had her on the show, you know, it was Kit, her daughter. Yeah. It was, for me, it was like, you know, I was able to express that gratitude to her because Kit was somebody who guarded her mother access. And when you wrote a fan letter to Eartha back in the 90s, it was sent to Kit Shapiro. Mm-hmm. And Kit would read it and be like, okay, this is something that my mother would enjoy reading.
And here's some condoms to put in the envelope.
Yeah. And so Eartha, so I, you know, back when Eartha Kitt was persona non grata in the United States, you know, she had not made her comeback yet. And I found this really great interview about her in this book called It's Incredibly Strange Music by Research Publications. And in the back of the interview, they had it like, if you'd like to write to Eartha Kitt, here's her mailing address. And so I wrote this long letter about, you know, how Eartha's book and her story really spoke to me as somebody who looks white, but grew up in Puerto Rico and never felt embraced by my mother's side of the family in Texas or my father's side of the family in Puerto Rico. And, you know, and I really related to her life story and her music and the quirkiness of it. And so when I sent that letter, Eartha responded like this 4-page essay about safe sex. And, you know, I wouldn't want anything to happen to any of my babies. So I want you to promise me that you will use your condoms every single time you have sex.
And did you?
No.
No. Because he was a hoe.
Because I'm a hoe.
You disappointed Mother Eartha.
You know, Eartha said she was very proud of me, and she said that she loved me, and that she said, security.
But, you know.
Security.
But I think when I look across, but yeah. I also look at things generationally.
Yeah.
And so I look like, you know, like Mark was saying, people of a certain age, you know, musically, I look at the iconic singers who were mother figures, you know, because remember, there's that generation of Madonna queens, you know, there's some generation.
Let's talk about Madonna for a second. It's like, I felt like Madonna was just another pop artist. And remember when she was like right at the same level as Cyndi Lauper? And even like, even she was compared to other pop stars mm-hmm. at the time. And then Blonde Ambition and that tour and Truth or Dare and her kissing the Black Jesus and, you know, humping the bed and making out with women. And all of a sudden, Madonna was the queen.
Superstar.
The superstar that queen everybody had dreams about. Mm-hmm. There's a book about
Madonna.
Well,
you know, with her, is with, you know, dreams. She's got that sex book, but yeah. she really brought sexy back, or even just to the forefront. When you had singers before, it was a sultry kind of thing. A singer would just get up and, you know, stand in front of a microphone and sing, or if they were dancing around, it'd be more of like a Broadway act, yeah. that kind of thing. But she just, you know, she put that whole package together and really sold it and bought into it, and it gave people permission to dress sexily.
Yeah, I mean,
I was a kid, the girls were wearing like bustiers. I was going out like wearing boxer shorts and just like that and a t-shirt and stuff.
We wore underwear in public.
It was like that.
No, yeah. I didn't.
Well, you were probably a little too young.
I remember how important it was to be a rebel and wearing underwear in public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Mama and Daddy Gray did not play that. Like, I remember, like, no, you didn't. Like, I remember going to dance class once and got in trouble with my dad because I walked out of the dance studio in, like, you know, just like wearing biker shorts and a t-shirt. And my dad, no, you didn't do that.
Oh, because you were showing everything.
Yeah, my dad. Yeah,
well,
my dad.
Boxer shorts, you know, for a guy, kind of, you're still going to, like, you know,
I remember very clearly, like at the height of Madonna's notoriety, and when every person around my age group was like wearing bras, boxer shorts, underwears as fashion statements. Mm-hmm. Like we would go out to the clubs wearing Calvin Klein expensive, you know, $20 was expensive at the time, underwear, and everybody like, you are the height of fashion.
my father would have ripped. No, my dad would not have played that. Mm. That was a no-no.
Like, well, you wear clothes out of the house, and as soon as you leave the house, that's when you take the clothes off.
And it was not like a sex party thing. It was like you left the house in the cab wearing your underwear, and you had a little bag or something, and you got to the club, and the bag was where your ID was, so it was like a little purse or something, and you had very nice shoes, mm-hmm. underwear, and maybe a top, but most of the time,
well,
you were
just completely
naked.
Especially at the time of AIDS, that permission to feel sexy, you know, because when AIDS happened, a lot of people were just like, clap, like shut that shit down, and she was just like, let's keep this party going. I was younger then.
I was younger then. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no.
I'll tell you this: there is a lot of headset mics that were sold around that time period, just as a fashion accessory. And I remember like a lot of drag queens getting like a wire hanger and a cotton ball.
Oh my God!
And spray painting the cotton ball black so they could have a headset mic and they could basically be like, and it was a symbol of power. Mm-hmm. Like you're so powerful, right. You don't need a handheld microphone.
Well, also it was something new, right? Yeah. It was not something that people were used to seeing in that fashion, in that way. And she did make that headset mic a fashion statement.
And I think it's really funny because like Jean-Paul Gaultier designed all those clothes, you know, and right now we're seeing the documentary on Halston that's on television. Everybody's raving about that.
And the series on Netflix.
And the series on Netflix, yeah. And so part of it is like, it's really interesting, like, you know, other entertainers are like, Madonna stole my look. And I'm like, you mean Jean-Paul Gaultier stole your look? and you know, it was really fascinating that, like, I'm being shady. Visage. And part of it is like, you know, you're in a situation where Madonna's image and her strength as a performer and that Jean-Paul Gaultier line of clothing and costumes for that tour was so much in the zeitgeist that people started dreaming that they either were Madonna or having sex with Madonna or having friendships with Madonna. That there's a book out there called I Dream of Madonna, mm-hmm. which is a collection of women's dreams about Madonna and what it's kind of said mm-hmm. about this iconic entertainer at the time.
But I think when you look at all of those women who became iconic like that.
Yeah.
Like, so in a few weeks, I'm doing a show and I'm going to be doing Diana Ross.
Now, oh, I've been, Miss I've been, Ross, if you're nasty.
I've been performing, you know,
or
I've
Frosty,
been,
if
Frosty.
You know, I've been performing for 40 Frosty. Years. I've been performing for 40 years. And in the 20 something years of doing, of performing in gay bars and doing drag, I've never done Diana Ross.
Why not?
What?
I've never done Ross. I've never done Diana Ross.
Have you seen that video of RuPaul and Diana Ross trying to teach drag queens how to move? Yes, like
how
Diana
to do,
Ross?
Yeah, how to do, yeah, how to do stuff in the name of love.
And I'm just like, now, this is so stupid.
And the reason, but so you know, it's like, the reason why yeah. I never attempted to do Diana Ross is that there were queens who did Diana Ross so well and so flawlessly. And I'm like, there is no reason for my ass to be sitting here trying to do Diana Ross when we've got people who nail it like that. Mm-hmm. And so after 20 something years, I'm doing Diana Ross for a friend. And literally the first, like, I'm going to do, I'm doing Love Hangover. And I'm literally recreating the Central Park concert where she's in the cat suit.
Have you ever had sex when Love Hangover is playing in the background?
No.
I have. And it's like, you know, that rhythm is the same beat. The way the beat slows down is the way your heartbeat slows down when you have a bottle of poppers.
Ooh.
And I'm convinced that they, whoever produced that single was like huffing on poppers and they were like, this is the rhythm.
It could happen.
I mean, because, I mean, it could happen. Because, you know, one of the most famous bass licks in the world came from somebody watching a woman walk down the street.
Yeah, yeah.
Which rhythm is that?
The doom, boom, boom for My Girl. So the musicians for Motown played gigs at various clubs in Detroit back in the day. And they're a group of musicians who are referred to as the Motown sound. They're called the Funk Brothers. And the bassist was finishing a gig and headed to somewhere else, to another gig or a party or something. And this woman was walking in front of him and she had a rather large booty. And so he watched her booty move and decided, as he was watching this woman walk away, that he would create a bass lick based on how her butt moved. And the note formation became the walking chord that introduces My Girl.
You mean, wow. Yeah, that sunshine on a cloudy day.
That's the melody, but the boom, 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 boom. Yes, the boom, 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 boom. Yeah, the walking bass line underneath that. That's what it came from.
It's so easy to underestimate the influence that Motown has had on American culture.
It shifted the world. It shifted the world.
One of my favorite TV shows that Mark and I used to love watching was... what is it? Amateur Night of the Apollo? And inevitably, they always would stick like... this was like long before American Idol had, you know, the people without... who are kind of awkward auditioning. You know, Amateur Night of the Apollo had a clown.
Midnight at the Apollo.
Or was it Midnight of the Apollo? They had a stunt.
It was Showtime
at the Apollo.
But it came on at midnight, didn't it, in Chicago?
It came on late. Yeah, it came on late. 10 o'clock.
And you'd rub the stump for luck.
There was a tree stump that I guess they had to replace every so often.
Because they rubbed it down?
Yeah, so every performer would rub it for luck. So they, and you know, the tree stump was this weird looking object. Because it really got rubbed raw. And then they had a clown as an usher to heckle people who didn't do well. And inevitably, they would always stick somebody who was really off-putting.
Mm-hmm. And get booed off.
And that was the most fun.
One comedian tried to make some joke about Martin Luther King, and the audience was not having it.
Oh, yeah.
To the left.
And that's where like the phrase to the left comes from. And like even the show X Factor owes so much to that, you know, Midnight at the Apollo.
Showtime at the Apollo.
I don't even remember who was the host of the show.
At that particular time, it was Sinbad.
Really? Mm. No way.
It was Sinbad. And Kiki Shepherd was the secondary MC who would come out and put her hand over everybody's head so that the audience could scream for the person that they wanted to win. And the clown was not just a clown. The clown was iconic tap dancer Sandman Sims, who was one of the pioneers of tap dance in America.
Do you remember when Monique was hosting it for a hot minute?
I do.
Yeah. She was so great.
As a child, I actually worked with Kiki Shepherd.
Oh, wow. Wow. And what capacity?
In 1984, I was in the production of Porgy and Bess that actually happened at the Erie Crown Theater in Chicago. And it was a connection with the Houston Grand Opera. And Kiki was one of the dancers in the show.
Wow.
And for people who don't know, the Erie Crown Theater in Chicago is where, like, if they ever do a production of Tyler Perry plays,
it's there.
It's usually there. Yeah.
Or My Arms Are Too Short to Box with God.
Short to Box with God was also there.
What was that play even about? There used to be ads for it all the time on TV.
It was about the experience. It was about the experience growing up in the Black church.
Okay.
It literally was a full musical based on the Black church. Mm. It's actually the musical that Jennifer Holliday was in before she got the role of Effie White in Dreamgirls.
Wow.
Oh, I love that little note.
I didn't realize that musical was that old. I'm talking about like the 90s, late 90s. They would have it on television in Chicago.
Now at the Erie Crown Theater, My Arms Are Too Short to Box with God. Get your tickets now. Call Ticketmaster.
It's a show from the 70s.
Oh, wow.
And it is a show where a great deal of Black music icons. Patti LaBelle was in the show. Jennifer Holliday was in the show. Al Green was in the show.
Oh, my God.
A great deal of musicians did that show. The song Are You Ready for a Miracle that they use in the Steve Martin movie where he plays like the preacher.
God, I don't even know what that is.
Are you talking about the jerk? No, he plays like this evangelical preacher who goes around and does like church revivals.
Yeah.
And one of the songs. No.
And so there's a song in it called Are You Ready for a Miracle? That song comes out of the Your Arms Too Short to Box with God.
Hmm.
I feel like everybody's Googling it right now, but it's like, yeah, I guess Frisia, yeah. Lisa, and Trey. It's a leap of faith.
Yep. That song is in Leap of Faith.
Are you ready
for a miracle?
So what other kind of divas nurtured you? Mark, you were saying like, you know, of course.
For me, I'm not into the musical divas like a lot of people are. So for me, it was more like the television and comedy divas. And I loved my redheads, you know, Lucille Ball. I loved all of her TV shows. And I'm practically living in an episode of I Love Lucy with, you know, my husband, Ricky here.
Mark, you have some explaining to do.
And then, of course,
you know,
they always have like, you know, these entertainers coming through the house and situations happening. And it always seems like that when people are coming over to the house, I'm like, God, I feel like I'm living in an episode of I Love Lucy. Cause you know, there's always some kind of turmoil happening and whatnot.
Mark, Bianca Del Rio's coming over and you need to be on your best behavior.
I think for me, because I was a kid who wanted to be an entertainer, sort of like you're saying, Mark, I had to know the people. My family was like, if this is what you are going to do, you need to know who these people are. And like one of the best pieces of advice that my aunt gave me, she said, baby, learn everything you can about being in your business, because there might be a moment where, you know, you might audition for something and you may not get the role. But because you have other skills, you'll get hired. So she made sure that I knew the people in fashion. She made sure that I knew the people in, you know, in music, and that I knew the comedians and things like that. Like one of my icons, and literally one of my mothers, is Moms Mabley.
Oh, wow.
Because I love Moms's humor. Like, baby, can't you know, only thing an old man can do for me is give me a young man phone number. You know,
Moms was kind of popular on the talk show circuit in like the 70s, right? But that wasn't her typical humor, right? She was on that circuit, and you know, the Chitlin circuit, they call it. And there you pretty much could say or do anything you wanted.
And she did. And what I also what I learned about Moms is that on stage, mom's was this sort of soft, non-threatening old black grandma. But off stage, she was not that at all. Like in her younger years, mom was a good old butch lesbian walking around, you know, walking around in her suits with, you know, and I think for me, somehow finding out later that some of the women who I really idolized and who musically influenced me or influenced me comic wise were also queer women made my day. Like, you know, Ma Rainey and not Bessie Smith, but Ma Rainey and, you know, just to find out later, you know, when you listening and you don't know nothing about the Black Bottom. And then out of nowhere, you find out that Ma Rainey was a lesbian. You find out that mom's Mabley was a lesbian. That made my day because these were these pioneering queer Black grandmas. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing thing. And so to then go and move and navigate. So, you know, I got that sense of humor from one person. I got the ability to interpret a song or what it meant to be sexy from Lena Horne and Dorothy Dandridge and Eartha Kitt, you know, and then to move to being a good old big mouth church powerhouse like a Patti LaBelle or an Aretha Franklin. It's this evolution, you know, but then and then I look at the other ladies that I love because I always say two of the women in Hollywood that I adore, or three of them, actually, I adored Ava Gardner. I adored Ava Gardner. I was in love with Vera Ellen. And the woman who I really wanted to be like was Katherine Grayson. Most people don't realize that I am a classically trained singer. And I am a legit lyric soprano. And if I get to sing with a baritone, it's over. Like, what I can do vocally as a classical singer with the correct baritone voice, it's flawless. And Katherine Grayson got to sing with all of the really pretty boys. She got to sing with Mario Lanza. She got to sing with Howard Keel. Oh my God, Howard Keel was so cute. And so it was that sort of thing. Did I know that sort of falling for, you know, sort of idolizing those women would lead me where I am now? No, I certainly didn't.
So Katherine Grayson co-starred with Abbott and Costello in the movie Rita.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing that most people don't realize is that all of those old MGM movie stars were Angela Lansbury's neighbors on Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Because if you work in the union and you work so many weeks, you get for a length of time of working, you get health insurance. So a lot of those older people, like when Murder, She Wrote was in their heyday, you had actors and actresses like Katherine Grayson and people like that who had been working for years during the golden age, who were now in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, who weren't working anymore and didn't have any more health benefits and things like that. So Angela Lansbury, because she was still working and they were her friends, she put everybody to work. So literally, Cabot Cove was a who's who of the golden age of Hollywood.
Mm. How this is really one weird thing. I've met Angela Lansbury. I've spent a lot of time around her. I would say Angela Lansbury is about 6 feet tall, but her biography, everywhere I look, it says she's 5'8". And I'm like, there's photos of, you know, who actually is 5'8" is Doris Roberts. I have a photo of Angela that I took myself of Angela Lansbury and Doris Roberts standing next to each other. And you can see Angela Lansbury is an Amazon.
Well, was she wearing heels?
Shoes? She was not wearing platform shoes, but she was wearing heels. Get the shoes, darling. The shoes, baby.
Get the shoes, baby.
That's Dominique Jackson.
Have to get it right.
Baby, get the shoes, right. Baby.
It's Dominique Jackson, but it's also every other queen in the world. You know, any time you take pictures of any queen, they're always like, get the shoes, get the whole body.
Tell you my advice literally is, darlings, if it comes in your size, you buy one in every color.
Mm.
Well, so basically you kept Payless shoes in business until you moved out of Chicago.
I sure did. If I found a shoe that I liked and I found it, I would buy it in every color.
Did you remember Without You, I'm Nothing, when that came out in theaters with Sandra Bernhard? It's like, I feel like that film was so influential in terms of comedians and musicians and this idea that, like, you didn't have to stay in your lane, that you could
I don't know that I remember that.
Yeah.
But I certainly am one of those people where sometimes not being in your lane was a good thing.
Yeah.
Because I certainly didn't stay in the lane that people set me up
for.
And so that's the best part. Live your life. Live your best life.
But it's really nice to see Sandra Bernhard back on Pose, because it's like, you know, for a long time, Sandra Bernhard, and this is kind of the thing I'm noticing about, like, Ellen just announced that she's doing her last season. And we saw Ellen both on Comedians driving around expensive cars, going to get coffee with Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, it was a great episode.
And I thought, you know, and this is like, also, I think their lesbian entertainers are terrified that what happened to Rosie is going to happen to them. Like, it's the curse of Rosie that's haunting them. And that's why they're all like, must be nice, the queen of nice. And even Rosie O'Donnell says that when she was crowned the queen of nice, she felt like that was the end of her career. Like, that was the turning point. Because when you're the queen of nice, you never can live up to that. And so, you know, like, I feel like with Ellen right now, you know, she's somebody who's influenced a lot of entertainers and artists, and certainly Sandra Bernhard and Rosie O'Donnell. And these are lesbian comedians who at one point in time had the world hating them, like, right now, because they were like, well, you're not so nice after all.
Mm. You know, my grandmother used to say, baby, people going to talk about you for the good that you do. They're going to talk about you for the bad that you do. Sometimes they're going to talk about you just because they don't have nothing to do.
Yeah.
You know, she said, you have to figure out how to weather that storm. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say to people, I know that there are people out there who don't necessarily care for me. But again, I ain't going to pay them bitches no mind because they're not paying my bills.
The mothers in your family were saying that RuPaul quote long before RuPaul did.
Oh, well, I mean, it's an old black woman quote.
Yeah.
Don't pay them bitches no mind. Or as I like to say, you know, I live by the three F's. If you are not feeding me, financing me, or fucking me, you don't get to say much about my life.
Yes.
And then my sister, my younger sister, added on. She said, well, oh, I like the F's. She said, but I like the B's better. I said, oh, well, what are the B's? I don't deal with bitches, bastards, or bullshit.
Oh, I like that one.
You know, one great aphorism we got was from a guest named Miss Ronnie. Probably one of the funniest people we've ever met.
I know Ronnie.
You know Ronnie. And she now, you know, she wants privacy now. Like, she's said, you know, entertainment is not for her. But so please respect her privacy. But one thing that she said that I carry with me all the time, man's rejection is God's protection.
Right. Child, you know what? If I spent all of the time worried about the people who didn't like me, that's all I'd worry about.
Right.
That's all I would worry about. At some point in time, you have to look and you have to honestly just accept. You know, that's the thing about being a mother. You know, I tell all of my children, baby, live your life. Because not everybody is going to have your best interest at heart. And so, you know, when you asked me to do this show, I really started thinking about my relationship with my mother, my relationship with my mothers, you know, like Taj. You know, because my drag mother is Taj Mahal. Mm-hmm. And I think about the relationship that she and I had. And she and I are very similar, have very similar backgrounds. And it was interesting to be in her presence, because sometimes just being in her presence was enough. You know, we could sit and laugh and laugh and laugh about the smallest of things, but the love that was there and the love that was shown was very important. And that was the thing that I wanted to give to the next generation. You know, I hope that the things that I learned from the women in our community who I view as moms and aunts and things like that, I hope that that love and that understanding and that giving, and sometimes it's tough love. Sometimes it is very, you know, sometimes it's tough love, but sometimes it's open arms where you know that you are safe and that nothing in the world is going to hurt you. I hope that I continue to give that. Like, that's the thing that's important. Like, I look at the queer community and I look at when we choose our families, you know, that's the best part is we get to choose. We get to choose
right
how that works.
And I think, you know, we're all mothers to somebody.
Yeah.
Or daddies.
Or daddies. You know, when I went to Mark's mother's funeral, you know, there were some old lady. I think it's normal to wear black to a funeral.
Yes.
But I guess I have like, I look like a priest or something. Cause like out of the two or three old ladies, they're like, thank you so much, father. And I'm like, I'm not father, but I am your daddy. And it is like, you know, I didn't quite understand like why they would think of me as a priest or something, but it was like, I guess because we weren't wearing neckties. Is that what it was? Or
I don't know. I wasn't there for the confusion of it all.
Yeah, they were all like thinking I was the priest.
For a donation to the church.
She gave me $20.
I was like, okay.
My mother and father, my mother was a huge fan of African-American history. And mm-hmm. so for my parents... funerals, we dressed in West African print. So I actually made the looks that I wore for my parents' services. Mm. I made these big, huge angel sleeved tunics, you know, because my mother would have stolen one off of my body. That was her thing. Oh, I like that. That's pretty. You know, your mama would really like that. You should give it to her when you're done. And she would take it. Give me that. I did not make that for you, little old lady, but that's if you want to go ahead, whatever. I got more fabric at home. Aww. You know, and I, that's the thing. You know, like I said, my mother and I had a difficult relationship. We had moments and we had things where we had things in common that we loved, like both of us are avid doll collectors. My mother was trying to get her hands on pieces in my collection. And so
well, it's, like she was going to your house and trying to like steal shit.
Well, I don't live in the same, yeah. I'm here in Des Moines and they were in Chicago. Well, oh no. My mother was like, you need to bring me that. She pretty. She don't need to be at your house. She well, needs to be somewhere. Fun. She needs to be somewhere where somebody gonna love her. Excuse me. She is where somebody gonna love. No, that's not what I'm saying. You just need to give her to me. No, I am not giving you my dog. Get away from me. You know, we had our moments like any and everybody. Mm. But, you know, that, you know, I wouldn't wish that, you know, losing my parents has been difficult. You know, It is a minute. It is, you know, it is me struggling. Mother's Day was hard. Now Father's Day is probably going to shatter me because of my relationship that I have with my dad. Like, I'm just going to be like, don't call me. I'm going to be sitting at home drunk. Leave me alone. But I look at, you know, like, I look at navigating the world. You know, the reality is I hope that I paid attention to the lessons that they taught so that life isn't so hard. Mm. And I think, you know, and I think like when you were talking about music, I think that for me, it's like when I listen to older, when you listen to people talk about like the icons, like we talked about Callis and you talk about Judy Garland and you talk about Liza and you talk about Barbara Streisand and you talk about Billie Holiday.
Just for the record, Barbara Streisand taught me nothing.
Babs taught me that a funny looking girl can go out and be a star.
I'm still with Team Carol Channing. I'm mad at Barbara Streisand for stealing Hello Dolly from her.
Well, Marilyn, you might as well be mad at Marilyn, because they basically told her, they told Carol that she was too ugly to be Lorelai Lee for the film. That's how Marilyn got the role.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love them both in it for way different reasons.
It's very different portrayal, and you can definitely watch on YouTube, like, you know, Carol Channing doing Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, and you know, again, like Angela Lansbury, she was
tall
giant.
And gangly.
Yeah, super tall.
Her dancers looked like little people next to her.
She was a Lansbury, like Harvey Girls. Angela Lansbury in the Harvey Girls when she's wearing the showgirl outfit.
Yeah.
Oh my God, she's absolutely stunning. I'm like, that's Angela Lansbury? Are you kidding me? You know, or watching her in Mame. She was fabulous in Mame.
It was a tragedy that the sequel to Mary Poppins, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, was such a flop.
I don't know. They're not sequels. They
were meant to be, actually. They tried to get Julie Andrews to do it.
Oh, really?
Oh, cool.
And Julie Andrews said no, but then felt guilty about it and said yes, but they already had signed Angela Lansbury to do Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Take me to the Isle of Naboombu.
It's just so stupid. It's just like, it just doesn't have the charm, or, you know, and it was done by the same people, the same team of people put together Bedknobs and Broomsticks that Mary Poppins. But,
well,
you know,
it's okay. It was, yeah. But it's sort of like when you hear the music. Okay. For example, we're going to talk about musical icons again. Let's talk about the song Son of a Preacher Man and Aretha Franklin's version of Son of a Preacher Man versus Dusty Springfield's version of Son of a Preacher Man.
The daughter of a preacher man.
done in the same studio with the same musicians.
I prefer the Dusty Springfield version.
Do you like
the Aretha version?
I like them both. I like them both for different reasons. They offer a very different perspective. Each one is a different perspective.
Mark, what do you think about Aretha Franklin's music?
Let's see. I'll have to get back to you on that.
You know, I love Aretha. You know, she had some big hits when I was in high school and college. You know, she got a lot of radio play, so I have a lot of affinity from there. And of course, from the Blues Brothers doing R.E.S.P.C.T.
But the iconic. But the funny thing about Aretha Franklin is that, you know, even though a lot of people interpret her music as to be very, have a lot of passion and sexuality in it, whenever she gets interviewed about it, she's like, I'm a righteous Christian woman. I don't know what you're talking about.
But you know what? Okay, now here's a music lesson. Most people don't realize that so much of early R&B music and early soul music came out of the church.
Hey, listen, you know, fucking sometimes is godliness, too.
So there actually is a singer from Chicago who, in the early years, 50s, 60s, named Mitty Collier. Miss Collier is actually still alive, I believe. Mitty Collier had a song called I Had a Talk with My Man Last Night. It hit the charts. She grew up in the early black church in Chicago and recorded, and then decided to stop singing secular music. So she changed one or two words of her most famous song, and it went from I Had a Talk with My Man Last Night to I Had a Talk with My God Last Night, and the song went right on up for gospel charts.
So it's like Sister Act, but in backwards.
Yeah, it literally was the same. It literally was the same song. I mean, like, I was lucky enough to grow up singing with people who created music and sang in the early, you know, when, you know, having a piano at, you know, one point in time, you know, especially when you listen to Chicago style gospel, you know, well, we don't want no drums and we don't want no guitars and we don't want no pianos and no organs. We just gonna clap our hands because all the rest of that stuff is sending music. But then you turn around and you add those other things and those elements shift the entire thing. You know, at, like Little Richard was playing in, you know, was playing in church, and those same church licks that he played in church, he turned around and made secular music. So you just look at it differently, you know, and because, you know, sometimes all it takes is one of my favorite church songs that's not a church song is Don't Nobody Bring Me No Bad News from The Wiz.
That was a church song?
No, but it feels like one.
It feels like one.
Mm. When I wake up in the afternoon, which pleases me to do, don't nobody bring me no bad news.
Oh, don't you ever do that again.
That song gets sung too much in this house.
What do you think the song? Because it just doesn't make any sense that
she doesn't want any bad news. She wants information.
What is the point of that to the character at that point? It's like the Wicked Witch of the West in the original Wizard of Oz. She wanted those ruby slippers. That's pretty much what she was about.
Yes, and Don't Nobody Bring Me No Bad News means if you are not coming to me to talk to me about them shoes, don't you bring nothing else to me. That's exactly what it was.
In The Wiz, there was ruby slippers or?
No, they were they're silver. They're silver slippers.
But the Eveline wanted the slippers?
You gotta the ruby slippers are MGM.
Yes, that's right.
And but the originally were silver shoes.
She wanted them because they were her sister's shoes.
Yes.
Bottom line, honey, this chick put the ugly and ugly. But she sure had some pretty shoes.
Do you think like with the CDC saying like, you know, if you got your vaccinations, you can take your masks off, but
no, not really. Keep it on.
It's not going to be still up. Can you feel a brand new day?
No, because I don't I know what I went and did.
Yeah.
But I don't know what you went and did. So, you know, and I'll be honest, having lost both of my, I lost both of my parents to COVID. I am keeping my mask on until it is 100% safe.
And I'm like, are children safe from COVID? Because children ain't got no COVID vaccine yet.
Not yet. They're working on it. So
I'm like, what's up with the CDC? Basically, they're saying it's okay for children to catch COVID. Are they immune to it?
They have a better chance of surviving it.
They have a better chance of surviving.
Because they have these little stem cells, which keep creating new things to help their body grow and fight disease.
Mm.
I mean, you can basically shoot a gun through a baby's head, and it'll be fine.
According to the CDC.
Don't do that.
But I'm just saying that, like, you know, especially they have a lot of those stem cells.
Why those children practically heal themselves?
They do.
Mm-hmm. We are doing daycare and babysitting services.
Well, as you get older, your body loses that ability to repair.
That's why you gotta take care of the cells you got.
Mm-hmm.
Little germy creatures, but they my germy creatures. So,
Alexandra, it's so good talking to you. And again, to you and to Mark, I'm sorry for both of your losses of your mothers.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, it's nice that we have these amazing entertainers to turn to in their music and their comedy and their books to inspire us. What are you doing?
Nobody needs me, although I may go where destiny leads. Sorry, I was having a Dionne Warwick moment. You said, you know, who can we turn to? So I was having a Dionne moment.
We didn't even talk about Dionne Warwick, did we?
We didn't talk about Shirley Bassey either. Goldfinger. He's the man with a Midas touch, a spider's touch, such a cold finger.
Diamonds are forever. They all I need to please me. Forever, 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 and ever. Oh, Shirley Bassey.
Golden words he will pour in your ear. But these lies can describe what you fear. For a golden girl knows that she's kissed her. It's the kiss of death. From Mr. Goldfinger.
She did a, Shirley Bassey did this cover of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. What goes up must come down.
I think mine has to be, I think my favorite cover of hers has to be Get the Party Started.
Oh, yeah.
That was Brilliant. Pink's song originally, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then she get the party started on a Saturday night. Everybody's waiting for me to arrive.
Brilliant.
I've got lots of style, check my gold diamond rings. I can go for miles, if you know what I mean.
She means fucking. What was the other one? That song, A Little Bit of History Repeating, just that was such a hit.
Just a little bit of history repeating.
There's something about the world, it's evolving. And it doesn't know if it's coming or going. Life for us to enjoy. Woman, man, girl, and boy. Feel the pain, feel the joy. It's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Because history is what? Fundamental, honey.
Well, that's reading.
And history, too.
Yes, because if you don't know your history, baby, you are bound to repeat it.
Yeah, and bound to forget it, too.
Hello, good morning. You can't forget something you
ever know. If you don't remember your history, you're bound to forget about it.
The thing is people remember history and they repeat it anyway. It's just the human nature.
Well, yeah.
You
know, I mean, sometimes we learn a lesson.
That's because they ignorant as hell.
Well, sometimes, you know, there's pleasure in learning, and so we just have to learn our lessons over and over again. Oh, because it feels so good to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's painful.
You ain't had none lately, have you? Mark needs to fix that just because that's just too much.
I got two hands, honey.
That's too much.
God gave me some hands, and I put them to use.
That's too much. Ain't nobody got no time for that. That's too much.
Alexandra Gray, may you have a wonderful day.
I shall. I'm going to go to sleep now.
In your coffin.
No, darling, no. That's for special occasions. I can still gaze at the portrait and see exactly how old I used to be.
Uh-huh. You can just Photoshop that portrait now. Just
yeah, really.
The portrait can stay young and beautiful too.
Both of you can be pretty. Age is just a number you have to lie about sometime.
No. Baby, I'm going to be 48 and I'm happy about it because you know what? A lot of trans women don't get to be 48. Mm.
That's right.
And so I'm excited about it. I'm planning a fabulous birthday party for my 48th.
When is your birthday?
My birthday is in December. Oh. So I will be planning something stunning for my 49th. And then, of course, you know, we're looking forward to being filthy and 50.
Mm-hmm.
How are you enjoying the final season of Pose?
The first episode took me out. And I was rather shook. And I haven't watched this latest episode. I haven't watched the latest episode yet. And so it's, you know, and just in some of the things that I'm reading, it's probably going to be another one that's going to set me on my butt because I grew up in church. And, you know, so it's going to read something into how I feel and something about, you know, something is going to come up in how I was raised, what happened, and so, you know, it's an interesting journey.
And you're going to see some very familiar faces on the episode.
Yes, I've already seen that Janet Hubert is in the show, and that Jack A. Harry is in the show, and that Anna Maria Horsford is in the show. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm like, oh, it's like, you know, a reunion of Black aunties from TV.
I'm surprised that people don't use the good Aunt Vivian more often, you know?
Well, she had a lot to fight, you know, come back from. So it's good to see her working again.
Mm-hmm.
What did you make out of Janet Mock's, you know, standing on the podium at the red carpet premiere event in New York City and just said, fuck Hollywood?
You know what? Sometimes you got to tell the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, and
do
I.
Do you remember what she said? She was basically standing in front of everybody.
She just basically said what was on her mind, and you know, I left the industry 20-something years ago because I was trans, And I knew nobody was going to hire me then.
Yeah.
Now it's a different story, and there's still stuff you got to fight. I mean, they, Laverne Cox just did a film not too long ago, and when they sent the film to Italy, the voiceover, the dubbing actor they got to dub her voice was a man, because they didn't think to have a woman.
That's some shady shit.
Read, you know, do the voiceover for her. And so, you know, we're still, you know, it's like another one of my grandmother's phrases. I'm not where I should be, but I'm not where I used to be. So that means that there's still a fight. You know, yeah. I could go and audition for something and get cast in something as a black trans woman, and somebody's still going to say something wrong about what I'm doing or if I'm valid or any of those things, because I've had people do those things. So no, baby, I know there's still work to be done. You know, my grandmother would say, I'm not where I used to be. Thank God I'm not where I used to be. So the reality is, live your best life. Keep moving forward. You're still going to have to work. You're still going to have to do the things. And that's where it is. We're going to live. We're going to love. We're going to keep moving. And that's what it is.
Alexandra, thank you so much, love.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and come back again soon. And you have a great rest of the month, and enjoy Pride Month coming up.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Love you. Alexandra Gray lives in Des Moines, Iowa. Check her out on Facebook at The Lady Alexandra on Facebook and social media. Sorceress supreme, purveyor of divine treats, the maven of light and dark, the high priestess of soul.
Oh, it's always a joy to talk to her.
This is a really hard time, I think, you know, Mother's Day or just the springtime for people who haven't gotten that unconditional love they need from their own mothers. And my mother, you know, wisely said, always, even if you did receive that love, never stop seeking that out from other people. Yeah.
You want that maternal love from somebody else in your life, even if that mother is a father for here.
I'll be your mommy and your daddy.
You know, I have a great mom. I had a great mom too, but my friend Daria, her mom, Joan, named after Joan Crawford, because her mother looked like Joan Crawford. She became very much like a second mom to me. And through my teenage years, I'd sit there and, you know, drink coffee and smoke cigarettes with her.
And my own sister, Beatrice, my older sister, she is the one who saved me through high school when my parents had gotten divorced and they were kind of both in a fog. Like, you know, I was left behind in a lot of spaces, and she's the one who tutored me on mathematics and English and making sure that I was like passing my tests. And she's the one who got me, my teenage years into fitness. One interesting thing is that my sister, in her wisdom, saw that I had like stolen the Soloflex brochure. And she's like, let's get a Soloflex, you know, machine. And I was like to me, I'm like, this costs $5 billion. There's no way. And she's like, let's put an ad in the newspaper. Instead of desperately seeking Susan, she put desperately seeking Soloflex.
That's so brilliant.
And we got a Soloflex machine for like $300.
And they retail for what?
$1,500 at the time.
Wow.
So we got it used for $300. I spent the whole summer, like, you know, getting into really good shape with it. And then I was like, well, I guess I'm going to go to college in the United States. And I had to sell it. And I sold it for $1,000 and made a $700 profit.
Did you share any of that with Beatrice?
No, she was, I mean, she was like, this is your money. This is going in your future. Aww, you know?
That's so wonderful.
It was a real gift.
And doing this podcast over the years, we've talked to many great moms and mother figures and people who have given us like change, you know, information that has kind of changed our lives. But one person who I thought was really charming, a mom that we talked to, was Dolores DeLucia.
Dolores DeLucci.
Yes, who's written a couple of books like How to Get a Blowjobs, How to Get Ahead in Hollywood. And I was chatting with her recently because at one point in time, you know, to make ends meet working in Hollywood, she was the maid for Dean Martin.
Hey, Pally.
And so I mentioned to her, I'm like, oh, my God, have you seen the nudes of Dean Martin with Jerry Lewis? Because I guess Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis were like at a bathhouse and they took like publicity photos or something.
A gay bathhouse.
Well, it was, you know, a men's bathhouse. So who knows? And so like there's a picture of them in the shower together. You can see their dongs. They're sitting on a
couch. Their dicks are whipped out.
They're sitting on a couch, like, you know, just hanging out, smoking cigarettes, naked with some other people too. And, you know, men's nudity back in the 50s was much more casual than it would be today. You wouldn't see like two people just hanging out naked in the shower. But, you know, boys grew up showering together, swimming in the nude, all that kind of stuff. So we have a different relationship to our bodies now than we did back then. Could they have been gay lovers? Who knows? But she does mention in her book that he did talk about like Cary Grant and about like almost teary eyed talking about what a gentleman Cary Grant was. And she and Dolores is kind of like wondering, is like, is he coming out to me? But she never really knew.
I really loved him, Dolores.
But she was a mom. She's a mom, and she actually had a baby while she was part of the Coquettes. Coquettes, you know, the San Francisco troupe.
Well, that slip was not too disaccurate, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the
Coquettes. That's some shady.
Well, the Coquettes. Well, that's
Coquettes.
Coquettes. The Coquettes. Well, the Coquettes is a play on the word coquette, which is, you know, somebody that plays coy. And, you know.
I'm sure back in the day they were like, oh, those coke heads.
Oh. And, you know, she lived with Divine as well,
yeah,
right?
The drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one guest that I really thought was really fascinating was Monique, mm-hmm. who had just won the Oscar for playing, I guess, Precious' mother.
Yeah, just a year or two before, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, I think we won her over because I went up to her and I was like, I want you to strangle me like you strangled Precious.
And she did.
She did. She put her hands around my neck and squeezed.
And the security guard was like trying to figure out what was going on.
He's like, should I be protecting him from the person I'm being paid to protect? I'm not sure what to do.
But also, too, she had somebody who worked for her that was queer, you know, and I think that they kind of took a shine to us as well. And she's like, you've got to do this. And, you know, Monique's been very open about having an open relationship with her husband. And so I think,
and being both polyamorous.
Yeah. And so I think that, she was,
and bisexual
I was very open to talking to us. And, you know, the memory that I really recall from that is her talking about winning that Oscar and how important it was. And then she said that she stored it in the pantry.
That's where we keep all our awards too.
You know, for people that don't know what a pantry is, maybe you live in another country or something like that. It's, you know, the closet next to your kitchen.
So where you store your food.
Your food, maybe your cleaning supplies, that kind of stuff. And she said she did it because she wanted to honor all of the Black actors and actresses who worked as house workers, home workers, in the past. You know, because she really felt like she's standing on the shoulders of these people that really paved the way. And that's really, anything you do in your life, it's always because somebody else did something first.
No matter what you do, it's built on the shoulders of people who came before you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I mean, we've gotten so much wisdom from so many people. The reason why we were talking about trans stories and trans liberations a decade before, you know, the major LGBTQ rights groups were doing so was because of the influence of Kate Bornstein and Alexandra Billings.
And you came to Kate Bornstein because of her book, Gender Outlaw, right?
Yeah. Well,
What was it?
Gender Outlaw was the book that I read first. But she was a featured artist at the Vortex Theater in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. And I never got to see her performance, but I had read about it. And I was like really sad that I had missed it. And so I got the book and read it from, you know, several times back to cover. And it was like, for me, it as a drag queen, as a gender non-binary person myself, it was like, it just opened up so many avenues of possibility. And it was like, you know, and I know some, like I was interviewed for a documentary on Kate Bornstein. They didn't use the clip, but I said, you know, Kate Bornstein made this non-binary person comfortable with being the gender they were assigned to at birth.
Mm.
Which is a strange thing to say, you know, but it's like, it made me comfortable being a man. And for most of my life, I've not been comfortable being a man because, you know, men can do terrible things, but men can also do great things too. Men can be loving, men can be motherly. And, you know, it's really like all these great moments, with these people are available in the archives of Feast of Fun. You can go to feastoffun.com/plus and listen to all of them. An interview with Tristan Tarmino, with the show's number 780, called Menage a How Many?
And we learned a very valuable lesson about life from her, in that, you know, she wrote a book on opening up your relationship, right? And she
said, called Opening Up, A Guide to Creating and Sustaining Open Relationships.
Yeah. And the key factor was, is like, you know, we have this idea of equality, 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 and that every relationship has to be 50%. But that's
50-50.
You have to do half the work, and I'm going to do half the work, but sometimes somebody's always going to do more of that work or that kind of work than the other person. And you just have to figure out, is this relationship working for me, even though I feel like I'm the one that's doing all of the effort?
Like Paula Abdul says, two steps forward, we take two steps back. We come together because opposites attract, and you know. But part of it is like, it's not opposites that attract, it's complementary. And it's about seeking those things that complement you as a person. You know, and just like there are no two people that are alike, as Mr. Rogers says, God made you perfect just the way you are. Aww. Your relationship with another person is for the two of you or the three of you to determine what that's going to be. And it's for you to negotiate and to communicate with each other. And when we talk to, you know, great relationships, great loves, that's the cement that brings them together, is the communication. It's the passion for doing things together. That's why I think it's like, it's to me, I'm like, I keep thinking about like the title, because we're starting a bunch of new podcasts and just in the works right now. And I'm thinking about like the title, like Let's Grow Big Together, or Let's Grow Better Together, LGBT. And, you know, part of it is like, what does it mean to do bodybuilding? What does it mean, fitness? When we, because everybody always thinks about muscle or cardiovascular health, but we don't talk about like your sleeping, your breathing, your, you know, what is your soul? What is, the soul is your, that part of you that leaps deep inside you that makes you feel whole and makes you feel like there's a future in this world worth living for. And it's something that, that very quiet part of you that's worth cultivating and nurturing. And that, to me, it's like, you know, back to the mothers, it's like a mother is somebody who loves you unconditionally, who takes that feminine energy, and that's for you to determine what that energy is like, and nurture them and love you unconditionally. So if you're not getting that right now, seek it out.
Yes.
And if you, if you want me to be your mommy, I'll be your mommy.
Just take it easy on those nipples of his. They're very sensitive.
Ooh, everybody's sucking on them all the time.
We'll be your mommy or your daddy.
Yeah.
As long as we're here and queer, that's where.
And you'll never get used to it, honey.
Hey, I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, or join us at Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun. Visit our shop at feastoffun.com/store.
Yeah.
And get a t-shirt or a mug. Celebrate your pride.
Follow us on Instagram, Snapchat. Well, actually, we're not on Snapchat. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Facebook groups, YouTube, wherever fine podcasts are found. Feast of Fun. Search for it by name. Hit subscribe. Smash that subscribe button, baby. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.